Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And today, I just know that we're going to get some very valuable writing tips from our guest and author, Greg Dodd. Greg lives in Columbia, South Carolina with his wife, Caroline, and their Anatolian shepherd, Desmond. His debut novel, A Seed for the Harvest, won a silver medal for Christian fiction in the 2015 Illumination Book Awards. Greg earned both his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of South Carolina. His other published works include contributions to the anthologies Precious Precocious Moments and Birds of Passage. He is currently writing The Last Harvest, a sequel to A Seed for the Harvest. Greg and Caroline are active in their church and enjoy vacationing on Pawley's Island. And I am pleased that he is with us today, so welcome to the show, Greg.
Well, thank you, Pat. I really appreciate you having me on.
My pleasure. Now, are you vacationing at Pawley's Island right now?
Yes, I am. Funny you should mention that. We're actually down for the week. It's an annual tradition of ours that goes back to when I was just a baby, so we're happy to be down here. So I'm nice and relaxed and ready to talk about writing.
It's so beautiful there.
It is. Oh. It's gorgeous. I don't take it for granted. We're very blessed to be able to be here.
Beautiful place. So you're vacationing and you're writing. Are you a full-time writer or do you have another job?
I have, a real job. Writing is my hobby or has become my hobby over the past few years. But I do work full-time and writing is kind of a sideline project for me. So I'm happy to be able to be clear of work for the week, and I can actually create some new ideas for stories and make some progress on some of my projects while I'm down here.
Well, excellent, and I appreciate your taking this little bit of time to share with us, so that's awesome. So tell us about your book, A Seed for a Harvest.
Well, it's in the Christian fiction genre, and I guess to sum it up, it really is a story about someone who kind of struggles with the meaning and purpose of their faith, and through a series of events, tries to reconcile what that is, and they go on a bit of a journey and really learn what God has in store for the Christian believer and what that all means. So it's rather encompassing, but it is, I would characterize it as a relationship novel. The characters within the novel kind of help tell the story of faith and what it means to be a Christian. So I don't want to say too much because I'm hesitant to give away the ending and just call it six, but it's really kind of just a nice story of a real Christian faith and what that means.
Okay. So how did that idea come to you, based on your belief system?
A few years ago, I was leading a Bible study at my work, something that I had prayed about and felt led to do. And I was driving to work in the morning and actually had the Bible study that day. And on the way, I had this thought, you know, what would it be like if I didn't have to go to work? If all I had to do, apart from paying bills and everything else that distracted me from daily life, what would it be like if I could just do whatever God wants me to do? And first of all, what would that be? And what would it look like? And really on the drive to work, the concept for A Seed for the Harvest came to me, literally to the point where I pulled off the road and started making some notes right there in my car. And a few weeks later, I jotted down an outline, and from there, it kind of took a life of its own, but that's where the idea came from.
That's so interesting how people find the muse just randomly. So had you written before? Was this your first stepping your toe into writing as well?
Well, it's a long story to that, but I'll try to be brief. I guess about 25 years ago, I had the idea for a novel, a fiction story about time travelers being involved in the JFK assassination. And this came from some documentaries I'd watched on television, and I was watching the old show Quantum Leap on TV that was time travel, and I put the two together, and I came up with this great story, and I started telling people about it, like at parties and whatnot. And I was really encouraged by all the people saying, hey, you should write that. That's a great story. That'd be a great book or a movie. So I actually outlined it and started writing it, and then my first son was born, and writing kind of had to take a back seat. I no longer had time for that. But I still have my notes, and it's funny because, as you know, a couple of years ago, I guess Stephen King came out with 11/22/63 and his own story of time travelers and JFK. So I like to say I have proof that Stephen King's been in my attic and read my notes about that. That was my first kind of foray into fiction writing, and now I'm just kind of getting back to it. My son's 23, he's in living out of town. So I have time to do lots more things creatively now.
Wow, it took you 20-some years to get back, right?
It did, and I've still got my outline for the story. One of the days I'm going to write it. But.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that story. So you also then contribute to anthologies. What was it like to do that? I find that interesting.
You know, it's funny because I had never thought about that, but I was contacted by two different writers and publishing companies about contributing. I guess they found my presence online, but they asked me for stories, and I actually had two that I had, one I had written for a blog that I used to write, and then one I had just kind of fleshed out sitting on the beach last year. My wife and I were talking about a concept for a story, and I said, hey, I should sit down and write that sometime. And a month later, I got contacted, and I said, hey, I guess I need to write that story. Mm-hmm. So I put it together. One is very autobiographical. It's a sweet story about my son and experience that he and I had together. And the other is purely fictional. It's a fictional backstory of the Apostle Paul's life prior to his conversion. So that was a totally different writing project for me. It required a lot of research and creative thought and effort to stay theologically sound while being fictional at the same time. So both of those are published works, and I've gotten some good feedback on both. So it's been neat.
I always appreciate an anthology. You get so many varied ideas within one compilation.
Well, it is. And it's fun as an author to see your works, you know, right next to other works and see the contrast in writing styles and approach and philosophy and character development all in, you know, one book. It's really kind of a smorgasbord of writing styles and creative thought. It's really cool.
It is. I agree. You were just mentioning characters. Back to your book, A Seed for a Harvest. How did you go about developing the characters in your book? So many people tell me that they start off with creating the characters, and then these characters take on a life of their own and basically direct the direction of the book.
That's exactly right, particularly when it gets into dialogue between those characters. Sometimes dialogue becomes a story in and of itself, and it just kind of leads, as a writer, I find myself being a spectator to what's happening in front of me as I write, which is always kind of weird experience. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. You're watching something develop that you didn't see coming, but because you created these two characters that relate to one another in their own way, it just kind of develops that way. But one of the things that I realized that I had to do early in my writing was, you know, to make it believable. And that's very important for me, particularly with A Seed for the Harvest. What I wanted to do with that book was to create a story that, you know, yes, it's in the Christian fiction genre, but I didn't want it to be just speaking to people who are believers in Jesus Christ. I want it to be a book that anybody could pick up and say, yeah, I can relate to that. You know, whether the belief system is the same as mine or not, I wanted the story to be relatable. And I realized I had to flesh out good characters to do that. And I'm not, my background isn't professional writing, so what I did, I went out and just talked to people. And I put myself in some of the same context of events that the characters themselves would experience through conversations with strangers or whatever. And actually, some of the things I wanted to experience was the rejection that some of the characters in the book faced. So I put myself in situations with strangers where I would be, quite frankly, rejected. They didn't want to talk to me, or they didn't like what I had to say. And it was weird because I wasn't really offended by that. I was actually looking to experience what that felt like.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I just go up and talk to people and say, hey, I'm doing character research on the book. Can I talk to you for a few minutes? And I was surprised how quickly people would gravitate to that. They love being interviewed. They love talking about their own thought processes and so forth. They pretty much tell me whatever I wanted to know. I was a total stranger. So a lot of the character interactions in the book came from real experiences I had talking with people in my character research. I think that makes it much more believable than just making stuff up, you know?
Oh, I really like that idea of stopping people. And you know what? As you were saying that, I was thinking, what a great marketing tip, too, because then you can give them a card and say, hey, when my book is ready, I'll email you and you can get a copy of it and see how
That's exactly what I did. I have people ask me, you know, what's in your book? I want to read it. You know? So, yeah, it works that way. I still do that, actually, just to stay, you know, fresh with ideas. Sometimes here on vacation, I'll find somebody on the beach and do that same thing. And people are very welcome. They want to talk. And it's just fun to be able to meet new people that way, too.
Ooh, I love that idea. Yeah. Character research. Is there any other research that you had to do to create the book?
Well, you know, I mentioned the JFK idea from 25 years ago. But, you know, that's back when there was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to write a historical fiction account of the JFK thing, I was sitting in libraries. I was looking at encyclopedias. I was looking at old, went to college bookstores and bought old history textbooks. There was nothing like, you know, there is now just at your fingertips where you just click a button and you find everything on Google. So in terms of research for my book, Seeds of the Harvest, the character research was the primary thing, but because the story meanders across the southeastern United States on out to Texas, I had to do a lot of location research because scene setting is very important. You want people to be able to place themselves where the people are talking, and sometimes people who are reading the book have been where you're placing them, you know, in the story, so it has to be believable that way. So thank God for Google Earth and street level views and those kind of things.
It's true.
There's a lot of research, location research, so I haven't really get in my car and go places. But a lot of the settings were places I had been, like Savannah and Charleston and, of course, Columbia and other places. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to be obvious when it wasn't a location I spent time in. And I think being able to research that way location-wise was very helpful.
Sure. So as you were writing this book, was there a message that you wanted to convey to your readers?
Yeah, you know, that is the book. The book is, quite frankly, a message I'm trying to convey, and it's not just the story. If the Christian reader is reading the book, the message to them is God can use anybody, to make an eternal difference in someone else's life, but we have to put ourselves out there and take risks, avoid the feeling or fear of rejection, and just go ahead and have those hard conversations with family or friends or even strangers on the street or on vacation. It's what we're called to do. And what I wanted to do was give people the ability to experience those conversations, those tough conversations, in ways where, well, frankly, they don't always work out well, to let them experience the rejection on their own as they read, but also see the benefits that can come from it. So that's for the Christian reader. The non-believer who's reading the book, and I hope there are some out there, you know, I want them to see, hey, you know, they may not agree with the belief system, but they understand what Christians are really like. I think in the Christian media today, the entertainment industry, you see a lot of these movies that are geared towards the Christian audience. And a non-believer goes to those movies, they can't relate to it. They're seeing people that say non-Christians are the bad guys, the evil people who have to be overcome. And they say, well, wait a minute, what, you know, this doesn't relate to me at all. I don't get this. I don't understand these people. And what I want the non-believer to get out of the book is, you know, one, Christians are real people. They do have faults. And the book is very clear about that. I show the Christian characters a very real, you know, broad light where they see the good and the bad, the mistakes, the arguing sometimes. But they're real people. And the people are just looking for answers, and they think they found that in their faith in Jesus Christ. So those are the two really target audiences and hope messages that I hope people will pull from the story.
Well, from the reviews online, I can see that that is the case. Somebody wrote that it appeals to believers as well as seekers, and I thought that was a big statement.
That made me feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fun when you feel like you're hitting your target audience.
Right.
Let's face it, when you're writing in a tunnel. You have no mm-hmm. visions of what people are going to think about it. You're kind of, there's isolation that comes from writing a story and before people have read it. And then once it gets out there, it's very confirming to hear the reviews and the feedback be that way. So that's good. And I've also got some very personal feedback from people who contacted me having read the book and say how much it affected them, how much it woke up their faith, and they saw things in different ways. They see their faith in a new perspective. And that's very encouraging to me because that makes me feel like there's a life out, a bigger thing happening with my book than just my little efforts to tell a story. So if it's affecting people enough, faith level, that's the goal. That's mm-hmm. that's important to me.
Absolutely. And what about book awards and contests?
You know, I kind of got spoiled. The first contest I entered for book awards was that Independent Publishers Book Award, and I got a silver medal, and I thought, wow, this is great. I'm going to enter all these book awards. And it's not so easy. I found out there's a lot of competition out there, and I'm very thankful for the folks at IPP who gave me that award, but it's not, one award doesn't mean you win them all, and I found that, but it just makes me value that recognition even more when I find that it's just not so easy to get that kind of recognition all around. So,
right.
But it is a nice lead-in, though. It's nice to be able to say, hey, my book won an award. I was at a bookstore down here on vacation yesterday, and I had some extra copies on hand, and I stopped by the manager, and I introduced myself, and I said, hey, my book won a silver medal. Yada, yada, yada. And he immediately said, okay, I'll take five copies.
Oh, wow.
I said, okay. So it opens doors. I think it gives people a little confidence that what they're going to spend their time reading is something worthwhile. That's also important.
Absolutely. It is a door opener. Well, now tell us about the cover of your book. I really have a feeling when I see that cover. It's almost a sepia-type tone. So tell us about that.
Well, I should say that I had an image of what I wanted for the book cover, and I was working with a few consultant firms about book cover design, and they threw in some ideas at me, and none of them seemed to match the tone and character and feeling of the book, and I was getting very frustrated. I do know that when people see a book cover, that's the first impression they get, and whether they pick it up or not, that really depends on what they think of that cover. And I just happened to look, I was on the phone with one of these agencies, I looked up, and there's a picture on my bookshelf of my son and me walking on the beach, the actual cover picture you see. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I thought, that's it. Because there are two scenes in the book that really kind of resemble what you see on that book cover. So it also imparts the feeling of, the relationship aspect between the father and the son that are in the book. And it captures that. Just one brief image, I think, that little sentimental, hey, this is a special moment kind of feeling between a father and son. And that's captured a few times in the book. And it just felt like the right thing to put on the cover. And I don't like to say it's me on the cover because that sounds kind of narcissistic, but it is me and my son when he was just, 2 years old, I guess. Mm-hmm. I chose to go with kind of the washed out antique look because I wanted it to feel like an old photograph. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worked very well. I've seen people pick it up and look at it. And the feedback I've gotten is they love the cover, apart from what they think about the book. People seem to like the cover, and just the sentimentality of that father-son relationship comes through there.
Yep, absolutely. It hit me as well. And I had an inkling it was you.
Yeah.
especially when they were on the beach. I'm like, yep, he's probably at Polly's Island.
Well, that picture was taken at Polly's. And, of course, there are several things in the book that happen on or in Polly's Island, and it just seems to fit. So I was really happy to have that there. It means a lot to me.
Oh, I'm glad you looked up and saw that picture at that moment and had that aha realization.
Yeah, me too.
There's my cover.
Plus, it was free. I'd have to pay for the design.
There you go. It's all yours. Oh, my gosh. Well, speaking of your son, what does your family think of your writing?
They've actually been very, very supportive. My wife, bless her heart, has been my volunteer unpaid editor, which is very challenging for her because I wrote the book totally out of sequence. I don't know how most authors go about writing, but the story didn't come to me chronologically. It came to me in pieces and parts all over the place, like a summing a puzzle on a table and sorting out the pieces and putting them in order. That's kind of how it came to me over an 18-month period. So I was giving her chapters to read totally out of order. She had no idea what the story was about or where it was leading. But she read it and edited. She's a school teacher, so it really helped me to have that resource there. But she helped me edit it over and over and over again. And when she finally got to read it from beginning to end, she loved it. But she couldn't tell what I was doing apart from that. But my mom is probably my biggest fan. She actually arranged I call her my unofficial agent. She arranged my first book signing and told everyone about it. I sold 30 copies in an hour, and she's just been a real vocal advocate for me. And actually, her church has been getting behind the book. I've offered it in the bookstore and got a lot of feedback that way. And my brother is in sales, and he was the first person to read my manuscript. He caught me before I was actually ready to submit it for publishing for print, and read it, and he's been very supportive and doing it with ideas to promote it. He's got a real sales oriented mind, mm-hmm. So he's been giving me all kind of ideas about how to get it in people's hands. So it's been fun. I think the family's kind of rallied around it and kind of feel like it's their book.
Oh, I love that. That's such a great story. I figured that you had a good family who gave you lots of support.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I was going to ask you about your writing process and if you wrote an outline, but it sounds like this thing just came, like you say, in parts and pieces, and then at the end it came together.
Well, I did have to keep track of all that because the story as I was writing it or coming up with it, I mean, I would have ideas literally that would wake me from my sleep. I'd wake up at 3 a.m. and realize I just dreamed a chapter, and I'd hop out of bed and go at least capture what I had dreamed about or thought about. So I'm a fairly organized person. I had a spreadsheet that I maintained of all the ideas, the characters that were in it, the point of each story, a scripture verse that may go with it, all these things. And I kept moving the cells around the spreadsheet, trying to organize them in a coherent way. And it kind of goes back to how I develop characters throughout the book. And as when you get to know someone, they don't sit down and chronologically tell you their life story from birth to where they are now. You kind of get to know them in pieces and parts, mm-hmm. a story here, a story there, a memory here, a memory there. So the way I wrote the book, where you get to know the main character, is a series of alternating flashbacks to various points in his past and background to kind of let you experience his backstory. I know I'm currently reading East of Eden by John Steinbeck, and the way he develops characters, he tells you everything he could possibly think of about the character, to where you know all the details about them, their background, their personality, their weaknesses and strengths, and then he lets you see the story. And what I chose to do in my story was to let you experience those things rather than tell you. Mm-hmm. You know,
interesting.
So a lot of chapters are just little pieces and snippets of the main character's background, where you say, oh, well, that's why he thinks this, or oh, that's how he met that person, or now I get it. So by the middle of the book or so, you really know the character, not by me telling you, but just showing you all these different experiences in the background. So it's been kind of fun to develop it that way.
Oh, I love that idea, paralleling it in real life, how you get to know somebody and kind of take that journey with them. So you get flashes in the 3 a.m. and start writing. What does your work schedule look like when you're really writing?
That was rough, to be honest with you, because I didn't want to take time away from time with my wife, so I wouldn't write in the evening. I'd get home from work, we'd have our normal time together and whatnot, and she'd go to bed, or we'd get in bed, and then I'd wait for her to go to sleep, and I'd sneak out of bed, and I'd go back upstairs and start writing. So really, she never experienced the pain of being a writer's wife. You know, I was never really absent from her that way. The other time for me was very early in the morning. I would get up, set my alarm like at 4 or 4:30, and I would write for a few hours and then go to work. So it's really hard to turn on and off that creative process that way, but I was able to do it successfully. But it just took me a long time. It took me over a year and a half to write the whole story. But honestly, there were days at work where literally I'm sitting there and I said, I've got to leave. And I would take vacation time in the afternoon to go home because the story just starts coming to me and it's overwhelming. I couldn't concentrate anyway. So I didn't want to charge my company time for me to do creative writing while I was sitting there at my job. So I would leave and I'd take time off and I'd go home and I'd flush it out. So my joke about the writing process, the creative process, was like I felt like I was pregnant and the baby was coming whether I wanted it to or not, because I couldn't do anything to control it. It was just on its way and it had to come out.
Oh, my God.
I finally got it over with, yeah.
That's a great analogy. I think everyone can kind of relate to that when you're just so psyched up and, you know, you've got all this juices flowing and now you're constricted by having to be someplace where you don't need to be or you don't want to be. It's like, oh my gosh. luckily you were able to escape and get that on paper. So what was one of the most surprising things that you learned about yourself in creating your books?
That's a great question. I think what really surprised me was how much the story affected me. I mean, here I am, the one creating it, so to speak, or writing it. But, you know, the book is very emotional. It takes you on an emotional journey, ups and downs. You experience a lot of different things. And I know sometimes I would, my wife would come upstairs early in the morning. I've been writing for a couple hours, and I would just be emotionally exhausted. And she walked in, and she'd say, are you okay? And it's not fun. I just finished writing for a couple hours. And she looked at me kind of funny, like, is that what it does to you? Mm-hmm. But it really, you know, I think I experienced a lot of the things that the characters experienced in the book. It brought out a lot of emotions, and I put that into the story. And I've had people share that with me. Not that I'm just out to make people cry or anything, but I think where we really connect with the story is at the emotional core of who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's the pluses of the happy tears, the sad tears, the excitement, all that comes with it. If you can make people experience that, you've got them, right? You've hooked them into the story. Mm-hmm. At a level where they really have to know how it ends. And I experienced that really writing it in ways that I never would have imagined. And you also become very connected to the characters. You mentioned earlier, they just kind of take a life of their own. They do. You feel like you know them, like they're part of your life and your memory, and they're real to you. And that's kind of why I'm writing a sequel for this, because I want to keep that story going with some of the characters I'm going to love and I want to flesh out a little more.
I've heard that before, Greg, where folks say after they've written one or two books and they knew they were done with what they had to say, then they said, well, I miss him.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There was one character in particular in my book that he's going to be the main character of the sequel, and I really have an affection for him. I really want to to flesh out his story a little more and let people see the character that I know. You know, I've already written the story in my head, and I've daydreamed it. I tell my wife I see scenes and the ideas from my book, like movies in my mind. And she caught me kind of spacing out yesterday. We were sitting on the porch at the beach house, and I was just kind of staring off in the middle distance. And she said, you okay over there? I said, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm actually just watching a scene from my book I haven't written yet. And we kind of laughed about that because it just plays in my head like a story, like a movie visually. Mm-hmm. And then I write it down. So I feel like I know these people, and I want to see that story continue and let people experience what I've experienced. So I think it's a good story. I'm excited about it.
So that's what's next for you, right?
That's what's next for me, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, as we begin to wrap up, how about any tips for new writers? What kind of suggestions would you put out there for them?
You know, if I had been smart enough to get advice from an experienced writer when I started out, they probably would have told me, take your time. Now, I know I said it took me 18 months to write, but I probably should have slowed down a little bit, even more so. I got to the point where I was in such a hurry to get it done. You know, I used to pray driving to work that I wouldn't get killed in a car accident because I wasn't finished with my book yet. You know, I had to finish the book. I was in a hurry, and I got it out. But a lot of the creative process kept coming, even after it got out and even after it won the award. And I'm thinking, you know, I wish I had said this. I wish I had done that. And there's always time to get those details in there, to do the creative editing you want to do. And also, you know, I read New York Times bestsellers books with, and I find typographical errors in them. I mean, so if that can happen at that level, you know, it can happen to an independent publisher as well. So just take your time. Edit the heck out of the book, go over again, and don't be in such a hurry, because your first launch, the first time you put the book out there, is when you're going to get the most readers, and you want that first impression to be the best one possible. So just take your time and do your best and get your best book out there at first.
Oh, I think that's great advice, because I think we all have that tendency as all those thoughts and ideas rush and you just want to get it done. And yeah, to restrain yourself is probably a difficult thing to do. Excellent advice.
Right.
Yeah, great advice. Well, now, is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we missed today?
Really, you know, I would just encourage people, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of listeners who are on both sides of the fence. Some are not Christian, some are, and so forth. But, you know, just a plug for my own book. Don't be afraid to read something that doesn't really agree with your belief system. I'm the same way. I will read books that don't really flesh out the Christian story and the genre, just to learn what other people are thinking and kind of keep myself open to other ideas. Don't be afraid to do that with a Christian fiction novel. Just go ahead and see what it's like to understand a different way of thinking. And I think you'll find, at least in my book, a lot of surprises that will come to you that way. So be open-minded about what you want to read, and don't be afraid to dabble your foot in other arenas. That's one thing I'd like to leave with your listeners.
Again, excellent advice. Just it's almost a life lesson piece of advice. As you mentioned, you went out and did character research, and you're out talking to people that were going to make you feel uncomfortable, put yourself in uncomfortable positions, because that's how you learn and grow.
Yeah, it gets us out of the bubble. You know, we surround ourselves with people who think like us all the time. And I think that's harmful to us. I think we're missing life when we do that. I was in New Orleans a couple months ago and just looking for people to talk to. And I ran up to a young man and we sat down. He was probably about 22, 23. We talked for 45 minutes. We had nothing in common. Mm-hmm. But we both share our own perspectives about life. And I really enjoy that conversation and look for more like that. And I just think that's how God intended us to be. We are all connected in some way. We should be able to find our commonality between each other, regardless of our belief system is. I think it just makes life more rich. And that's what writing can do. That's what reading, you know, rich novels can do for us, is help experience other people's beliefs and understand the human nature a little more.
Exactly. So believers and seekers alike will enjoy your book. So why don't you tell us where folks can learn more about you and where they can purchase your book?
Yeah, well, thank you. It's actually available on Amazon. You can search for Greg Dodd or A Seed for the Harvest. You can find it very easily that way. My website is gregmdodd.com or feedfortheharvest.com. Either one will get you there. So there's a lot of testimonials, or I shouldn't say it that way, there. Reviews I've tried to capture on my website, both on Amazon and some other sources. I think we'll get a good picture of what the story is about. And you can also purchase it on Kindle for Kindle. It's if you're a Kindle, what's the Kindle Plus, whatever I'm not sure what it is, but it's free for Kindle subscribers, so you don't even have to pay for it. So it's out there. My purpose is not to make money, but just to get the message out there and let people enjoy a good book.
excellent. So I encourage everyone to head over to your personal website, Greg M. Dodd, and there's two D's at the end, D-O-D-D, GregMDodd.com, or the book title, aseedfortheharvest.com. Greg, I knew this was going to be a fun morning with you, and I so appreciate your advice and your wisdom and taking the time from your lovely vacation to share you and your book with our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Pat. It's been a lot of fun.